shouldn't have any reason to exist if you cannot pay your workers to do the content, that you're making exponentially more money than they are in regards.
And I think especially in terms of like newsmaking and journalism and freelance writing and stuff like that, there is an emerging field of inquiry which looks into this idea of computational journalism, which essentially means that we would have artificial intelligence. And I know for the people who have listened my open mic before, I hate artificial intelligence as a term itself so much. And I will not go into why and how. You should listen to my other shows for that. But artificial intelligence essentially is this idea that it's taking up the work of journalists in terms of collecting data, in terms of collecting information and the backgrounds of the interviewees, the events. And it is happening because there's so much information on websites, there's so much information on, let's say, Google, Microsoft, Chrome, and there is so much information that it is being repackaged into forms of blog posts. It is being repackaged into news articles, and it is being repeated, and so on. And these, as you just said before, these big tech companies and the news outlets are benefiting off from this recycled, reused things in journalism. And it is very, very harmful because the line which exists between this idea of fake news and this conspiracy theories, it's blurring so much because there are like floods and floods of news articles. Even if you Google, just write the word I in Google, just look at their search results, it would be 100 billion results. And why it's happening? It's because AI actually, in some cases, manufactures in the information from different websites and it presents it as its own. And it is thought as a credible source because it's AI, it's who is doing that. But we tend to ignore that actually AI is just reproducing the same biases. It's reproducing the same systemic failures. And yeah, there I go with my rant on AI, but no, we'll come back to precarious labor. Yeah, in terms of the study that I was looking to and the event that I was supposed to attend, they also underline that how these folks were the first one to pilot any sort of precarity surveys. And this group of researchers did the first ever BC precarity survey, which was completed by over 3,000 workers aged from 25 to 65. And they based their survey in 2019, and they found some interesting patterns. They found two different categories in which the precarious employment could be measured. First one of them was to understand what does even standard jobs mean. So standard jobs, according to them, is a full-time permanent job for the single employer. That includes the minimum at the least benefits. So that's the sort of standard jobs. And all the other jobs are considered as having some sort of precarity in them. And the things or the aspects that they found were unpredictable scheduling, working multiple jobs at the same time, lacking access to important workplaces benefits like extended healthcare coverage, childcare coverage. So these were the parameters on which the study hinges. And there is a existing employment precarity index and poverty index in Southern Ontario, which they base off their metrics from. And they essentially found out that 37% of the workers in BC are working in a precarious form, one form or the other. And even the standard jobs, as we understand them, have some elements of precarity. So that's an interesting number. I mean, that's before COVID even. So even if like almost 40% of the population is exposed to poor working conditions and precarity in some form, what do you think does that indicate about our job market? Even after COVID and as things are opening up, these ideas of that we are heading in an economic recession, how do you see those ideas contrasting themselves? And what sort of things do you see happening to the job market, perhaps?
Well, when it comes to precarious work disrupting the job market, especially in the recession, for one, I think it strengthens my argument that we should all just go to sleep and skip the 2020s. It hasn't been a good start. Let's just get to 2030. But that is not possible, the true problems right now with precarious work and the recession coming up is, I feel like companies are able to come up with a lot of excuses as to why they can undercut this work and get into more precarious working atmospheres, because they can say, well, it's the pandemic and then it's the recession and we're not doing well. I always say that, if company executives had their own flag, it would be a guy with his pockets turned inside out going, because, every company will tell you they're not making any money, even when they are. So it's easy for them to go to government and, to relax labor laws and, favor more precarious work, because they always just claim they don't have money. And the government always feels they need to, be kind to the big business, which, probably extends to the fact that when election time comes around, you look at donor pages, and a lot of those companies are in people's donor pages. So it becomes a circle of, no money leads to precarious work, and even money leads to precarious work.
Yeah, and because the question is actually who does not have the money and who has the money, and power and money are such funny actors for me, and I speak about it so much in my own show that I host. It's so mind-boggling to think about those two terms and how they are shaping the social structures as we know them. Rin, would you like to add something before I go into the next section and I just go off from them?
I don't really have too much to add per se. Mainly just the economy has only gotten worse. If you look at a graph per se, well, I think everyone has mentioned it already. If you look at the graph of the difference in wealth from the uber rich and middle class, that gap has exponentially risen in the past 20 years. Yeah, so that's mainly all I have to add for now.
No, that's all good. And I think it's very interesting, as you were saying 2 minutes ago, in terms of not having full-time employees, the other reason that they make, except from the money reason, is that the tasks are so easy. We don't need full-time employees to be sitting in our office and doing that job, and you can work from home. Well, that's true in some extent. But when you are outsourcing that jobs, you are not even paying that minimum wage to those people who are working so many hours to provide the services that you claim yourself to be working. I'm just going to bring up the example of Amazon's Mechanical Turk. And actually, that platform allows you to perform certain tasks for third-party organizations. And essentially, you're working for those third-party organizations, which nobody knows where they exist or even if they exist. You are given a task. Say, for example, you are supposed to write 100 words content on a social media post for some organization. You're asked to perform that task. And if you take up that task within 10 seconds of it showing on your screen, good, you get the rate. So for example, it's $5. But if you don't accept that request, some other person from some other part of the globe will accept that task request and will be paid more than you. So that is how that's working. Even when we book Uber or services from Lyft, we see this thing happening as well. It's because these employees would go lengths and lengths to have to pay less for their workers. And we saw this also trend happening when we had this industrial revolution. Employees tended to have more scientific and organizational skills and using technology to monitor its workers. We can see a similar sort of trend happening in use of AI and using platforms like Mechanical Turk to outsource the work and labor. And the conditions for the workers are the same. And even for the employees, it's the same. They are the ones who are earning money, and the workers are supposed to just like work without any sort of benefits. And the study that I was alluding to before we went on into discussion of economy also highlights that employment precarity has direct negative effects not only on individuals working in these conditions, but also their families, communities, and children. Workers in precarious jobs, especially those with low incomes, were more likely to report poorer physical and mental health. And for the caregivers of those children working in precarious employment were far likely to be able to afford school supplies and trips and so on and so forth. And caregiving is such an important aspect. Because why do you work? You work to have a better living. You work to have a better future for yourself and your children. And even if you're not able to provide that with any kind of job, yeah, that's the question. What are we even doing? So in terms of doing precarious work in any form, it is very important to ensure the workers that are putting in the toil are the part of your machine. So they are the part of the whole infrastructure, and they are secure and they are paid well so that they can meet their ends and they can provide for the family. And the physical and the mental conditions of the workers that I gave an example of. So for example, Facebook, they are exposed to horrific content 24/7. And they are supposed to function like a machine and say, oh, okay, this should not go on the platform. This content should be removed. This should be flagged as spam. So these people are essential part of the digital infrastructure as we know today. So it's very important that we have security and regulations also happening around them. And I think America is the first country who has brought to table some of these regulations in Congress, but it is still going under vetting processes. And as the technology is advancing, our regulations need to advance as well. And I will leave at that note for a moment, and I'll play the song, which is called Yesterday Is Gone. And then we'll have a brief conversation about what sort of policies might be helpful, what sort of solutions, what should be or can be done. And maybe leave on a hopeful note. And yes, Yesterday Is Gone, coming up.
I lost all at he's gone. As the sun has drawn for the day. Said he saw a thousand of his flaws, sharper than a claw on his face. Shows you something though it's far, just play long and don't conflict. 1, 2, 3 is what you see, words and time long.
You were listening to Yesterday Is Gone, and then One by One on the album called Yesterday Is Gone. And it is actually a 2020 album by the Canadian singer-songwriter Dana Gawenski. And yeah, she has some soft tunes to her music and really empowering words. And we were talking about understanding what precarity might look like and looking at and talking about some of the examples as we might encounter them in the real life. And before we went on the song break, two of the other terms that came up in my mind, because I look at understanding and changing landscape of labor and technologies. So I think I should have had more things to add into today's conversation. But the other term is called ghost work, and it is really related to this idea of using Amazon's Mechanical Turk. And as some of you guys might know what Mechanical Turk was, essentially the idea was that it was supposedly a machine who was playing a game of chess and winning against the other person. But it was later revealed that actually it was not the machine who was playing the chess, but instead a human inside a wooden box inside the machine who was performing those tasks. So in the similar way, Amazon hires people to do mundane, continuous, small, fragmented tasks on behalf of Amazon, and it is supposedly happening that, oh, Amazon is doing the jobs. So for example, having those tags which says Amazon Prime Day sale and all those certain things and features that you see in a platform are not just what Amazon's algorithms might do. It's actually the humans who are working on the back end and doing those tasks. And that's the idea of having a host work and a host worker. And the researchers that I alluded to somewhere in the starting who coined this term of host work find that host work is very central to precarious work in the digital economy because the tech giants very easily denote something as AI, but essentially it's the workers, human workers, who are performing those tasks. And even AI, as I talked in some of my other shows, is based on the human intelligence. So humans are the ones coding those algorithms and but supposedly it's the artificial intelligence. It's not artificial intelligence. It is basing its own tasks on the human work. So it's not that artificial intelligence is going to take up on all of our tasks or we will become redundant. There's nothing like that. And AI is not what you think it is. It's just the way tech giants get funding and more funding from the government and from other, what's the word that I'm looking for? Other stakeholders in the landscape. So it's all about money. So AI is not taking over jobs. AI is not replacing anyone. It's not taking over the world. It's a whole different game. And similarly for labor and workers and working in precarious conditions, it's not just AI who is taking over. So there have been years and years of work and years of training the machine models on tasks and coding. And they are the ones, there have been millions and millions of people who have contributed to how we see AI today. So saying that precarity is because of AI is not the correct thing. And I think Craig here wants also to add some things about maybe Mechanical Turk or something else that I completely forgot. So over to you, Craig.
Well, Amazon naming its product the Mechanical Turk is interesting because it's basically admitting that the work that they have people doing is being done by the unsung praises of somebody in a box. But I think that when it comes to precarious work, people may look at it as it's lesser work or it's not as good work. And I think that moves into a way employers view work now, where employers are, while not encouraging, they are letting bad work thrive. There is a recently in the movie Blackberry, a character played by Jay Baruchel said, "Good enough is the enemy of humanity," but good enough is what a lot of companies are, frankly, I think, striving for now, because if people do good enough or bad work, it allows that work to be devalued. And if that work is devalued, they can pay people less. And if they're paying people less, they can say this work is non-essential or non-consequential. Like, you look at somebody who, say, sweeps up garbage in a school or does any kind of janitorial work. We think that's not value because it's not skill, but the thing is, an AI robot can't do that. It can't be automated. A human needs to do it. So why is that not valued work, but, you know, something that's a much higher position might be considered valuable, even if parts of it can be automated?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very important point, especially in terms of having and doing that quote-unquote cleaning work. I think there's a term called micro workers. So people who work in the digital platforms and perform small tasks on a precarious basis They are understood as the cleaners of the internet. So they maintain and clean the hate that happens, the disproportionate targeting of hate that happens on marginalized people happens because there are some workers working in the quote-unquote third world country working hard to have and maintain those regulations and have social media actually be social and not antisocial. I think there's a very important linkage in that sense as well. Coming back, and I know we're running quite a bit of out of time, I want to draw on some of the solutions and key takeaways the report about BC Precarity Index highlights. And the researchers find in their analysis that, as Rin was saying, that precarity mostly falls on people on the intersection of inequalities. That is, people of color, it's generally women and gender fluid folks, because they are the ones who are very less represented in terms of full-time jobs and permanent positions. So they resort to these sort of easy money-making methods and are once again suppressed and oppressed, and they face inequalities because they don't have any kind of job security and any sort of regulations protecting them. As the report again highlights, is that BC government is looking into this report, and hopefully we'll have some strengthening in the workplace rights and protections, and there would be some changes as technology brings changes in the labor market. There would be some changes in the labor laws and how we understand labor and work happens, and even how community well-being is understood and how employment and well-being of citizens is interconnected. That's my understanding of this report. Any last thought, guys?
I can't think of too much more to say, but I will say that I do believe that government needs to start coming up with regulations and more enforcing the laws on precarious work. Because if precarious work is becoming more and more prevalent, the government needs to start building like things like healthcare safeguards and more, you know, assistance to help people like that. I know that with government, it's a case of government moves very slowly in, you know, new laws and combating this. But if this is the way people are going to be making money, then the government needs to support them, because they are not going to be supported by the employer like past employees once were.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I just came across some of the things that is happening in Ottawa. The Public Service Alliance of Canada, actually, which represents more than 2 million workers in every province and territory of Canada, are providing resolutions and providing feedback to the government of Canada to look into how the workers are represented in the gig economy and in the precarious sector. Thanks so much once again, you guys, for joining me today. And I hope I'll have some more material to talk about next week. Thank you so much for tuning in.